Well, U.S. public opinion is actually studied with great care and depth, and we know a lot about it. There were major studies released by the most prestigious outfits right before the election, and they showed that people planning to vote for Bush assumed that the Republican Party shared their views, even though the party explicitly rejected them, as was shown. And pretty much the same is true of Kerry supporters. It's modified slightly if you give a very sympathetic interpretation of occasional vague statements that most voters had probably never even heard. The major concerns of Kerry supporters were the economy and health care, and they assumed, falsely as it turns out, that he shared their views on these matters, just as Bush voters assumed falsely that the Republicans shared their views. So, summarize all this. Among those who bothered to vote, they mostly accepted the imagery that was concocted by the PR industry, just as in the non-existent markets that were taught about in economics courses. And the imagery had only the vaguest resemblance to reality. That's, of course, apart from the more wealthy, who do tend to vote their class interests, apparently even more so in 2004 than 2000, which probably accounts for most of the small difference between these 2 years. Well, what about actual public attitudes? That's crucially important, especially for those who want to change the world. Well, again, right before the election, October, major studies were released reporting public attitudes in the United States. And when you look at the results, which are barely reported, you see right away why elections have to keep to deceit, much as in the fake markets that we're taught to revere. Now, here's a couple of examples of public attitudes, virtually quoting from the studies. A considerable majority of the population believe that the United States should accept the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court and the World Court. It's rejected by both parties. That it should sign the Kyoto Protocols, that it should rely on the United Nations to take the lead in international crises, including security, reconstruction, and political transition in Iraq. That's been true for a year and a half. And even the majority believes that the United States should abandon the Security Council veto and follow UN decisions even if it doesn't approve of them. Majority again believe that that the U.S. should rely on diplomatic and economic measures more than military ones in the so-called war on terror. And here's a crucial one. The U.S. should use force only if, I'm quoting, there is strong evidence that the country is in imminent danger of being attacked. That means a large majority reject the bipartisan consensus on so-called preemptive war and adopt a rather conventional interpretation of the UN Charter. Overwhelming majorities of the public favor the expansion of purely domestic programs, primarily health care, it's 80%, but also expanded aid to education and expanding Social Security, also like 60-70%. That's been found for years in the same studies carried out by the most reputable organizations that monitor public opinion. In other mainstream polls, 80% favor universal health care. That's something that's also been true for a long time. The numbers vary depending on exactly how the questions are asked. Occasionally, the press discusses this. It says, yeah, everybody seems to want it. But there's a phrase for it. It's called politically impossible. That's how the New York Times has described it in the past. Just again, a couple of days before the election, the New York Times had an article on this, and here's what it said. It says, there is so little political support for government intervention in the healthcare market in the United States. That's not universal health care, but any government intervention in the healthcare market. There's so little political support for it that John Kerry took pains in a recent presidential debate to say that his plan for expanding access to health insurance would not create a new government program. That is what the large majority of the population want. But it's politically impossible, and that's correct. It's opposed by the insurance companies, the pharmaceutical industry, and Wall Street, so it's therefore politically impossible in a country where the elite doesn't, not only doesn't pretend that it's a democracy, but doesn't want it to be. So like if 80% of the population wants something, it's politically impossible and has no political support if it's not supported in the places that matter. Well, you go, I could go on with these studies, which are quite interesting, but one interesting thing about them is that they are held by people in virtual isolation. They rarely hear them. They probably regard them as idiosyncratic, like I'm the only person in the country who thinks this. They don't enter into political campaigns. They only enter very marginally into articulate opinion in the media and journals. And the same extends to other domains. And it raises quite important questions about what we call a democratic deficit when we're talking about others.